Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Good morning. Today is Monday, March 23rd, and I'm your host, Steve Brown. Wall Street Breakfast is brought to you by Seeking Alpha Premium. Unlock the power of Seeking Alpha through our articles, data, and advanced tools. Try it today at seekingalpha.com/premium. Our top stories today. No agreement yet on a coronavirus stimulus bill. Dire warning. And finding a bottom? Leading today's news. Following a big turnaround on Friday that resumed a sell-off on Wall Street, markets went into another tailspin overnight as a Senate vote on a coronavirus rescue package failed to gain sufficient traction. In the words of Chuck Schumer, the $1.8 trillion package was a large corporate bailout with no protections for workers and virtually no oversight. The 47-47 decision came up short of the required 60 votes. Futures have now trimmed their losses with the S&P 500 down 3%, as Schumer said disagreements over the bill could be overcome in the next 24 hours. The U.S.'s inability to move things forward stands in contrast to many of its now free-spending peers, though equities are still selling off across most of the globe. In other news, the market for commercial real estate mortgage loans in the U.S. stands on the brink of collapse, according to Colony Capital Chairman Tom Barrack, with banks, mortgage REITs, and other non-bank lenders now at a precarious juncture. A market collapse of this magnitude would have catastrophic follow-on effects across the American economy if banks and the government don't take prompt action. Echoes of 08? Mortgage bond sales on Sunday included at least $1.25 billion of securities by Morningstar's five-star rated Alpha-Centric Income Opportunities Fund, which lost more than 30% of its value last week. The fund's lead portfolio manager is also a 20-year Lehman Brothers structured finance veteran. The difference between a fast or prolonged recovery in the stock market will come down to three factors: how quickly the virus is contained, whether businesses will have access to enough capital and liquidity to last the 90 to 180 days, and whether fiscal stimulus can stabilize growth forecasts, according to David Kostin, chief U.S. equity strategist at Goldman Sachs. With that being said, Goldman forecasts the S&P 500 could be in for a 41% fall from peak to trough. Bank of America believes the sell-off might not ease until the index tumbles 47%, while Credit Suisse estimates the benchmark could be in for a 35% drop overall. As the world grapples with the coronavirus pandemic, St. Louis Fed President James Bullard expects an unprecedented 50% plunge in GDP and sees the U.S. unemployment rate hitting 30% in the coming months. If the projection proves to be true, unemployment would be worse than it was during the Great Depression, and three times worse than the global financial crisis. "Everything is on the table," he said, referring to additional lending programs from the Fed. There is probably much more in the months ahead depending on where Congress wants to go. Amazon is open for employment. Across the world, people are feeling the economic effects of this crisis, and I'm sad to tell you I predict that things are going to get worse before they get better. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos wrote on Instagram, "We hope people who've been laid off will come to work with us until they're able to go back to the jobs they had. We're hiring for 100,000 new roles and raising wages for our hourly workers who are fulfilling orders and delivering to customers during this period of stress and turmoil." New York State has more coronavirus cases than France or South Korea, with NYC the new epicenter of the COVID-19 outbreak in the U.S. The number of confirmed infections has soared to 15,168, about half of newly reported cases in America, according to data released by Governor Andrew Cuomo, who said the state is testing, per capita, more than any country in the globe. Cuomo has also asked the federal government to nationalize the purchase of medical equipment, as NYC Mayor Bill de Blasio warned the city is just 10 days away from running out of essential equipment. Ford, General Motors, and Tesla are being given the go-ahead to make ventilators and other metal products fast. "Go for it, auto execs. Let's see how good you are," President Trump tweeted after invoking the Defense Production Act last week. Carmakers have already shuttered their operations, but the statement suggests they could be back at work to help the country with a potential health crisis. While it could be difficult to retool an auto assembly line, the companies have 3D printers for components, clean rooms in some plants that could meet FDA standards, and Tyvek suits used in paint shops that could be repurposed. IBM is collaborating with the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy and the Department of Energy to launch the COVID-19 High Performance Computing Consortium. 16 systems with more than 330 petaflops, 775,000 CPU cores, 34,000 GPUs and counting will be provided to develop predictive models to analyze the coronavirus progression and identify potential treatments. Researchers from around the world can submit proposals, and the consortium will select the projects that could have the most immediate impact. While European telecoms operators have been able to cope with the data traffic rise so far, there are fears of network congestion as more people work from home. EU industry chief Thierry Breton has also urged streaming platforms to free up bandwidth for healthcare needs and distanced learning. Facebook is the latest to reduce bit rates for videos on Facebook and Instagram in Europe, joining Netflix, YouTube, Amazon, and Disney in downgrading their video quality. Rattled by a plunge in its stock price, SoftBank is offloading up to $41 billion in assets so it can buy back shares and redeem debt. Combined with the previously announced 500 billion yen share buyback, the company said it can end up repurchasing 45% of its shares outstanding, prompting shares to climb 70% in Tokyo overnight. Other tensions are brewing. Reports last week suggested SoftBank wanted to back away from part of its WeWork bailout, while the latter said it's preparing for a fight. As of 6:20 a.m., U.S. futures and crude oil are all set to open in the red, with gold slightly down. On today's economic calendar, the Chicago Fed National Activity Index is out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Wall Street Breakfast is brought to you by Seeking Alpha Premium. Unlock the power of Seeking Alpha at seekingalpha.com/premium. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please be sure to rate and review it below. Your feedback is deeply appreciated. Up next, we're sharing a special report on how the COVID-19 outbreak is affecting global trade, a critical component of the world economy that's often taken for granted. As the past few weeks have taught us, nothing can be taken for granted. We're living in dramatic times, and it can be hard to keep perspective. To help our listeners better understand the situation, Wall Street Breakfast will be producing a series of special reports featuring the best of Seeking Alpha. Today's discussion features Marketplace author Jay Mintzmyer, founder of Value Investor's Edge, a shipping and energy-focused service. He is speaking with Lorianne LaRocco, a renowned journalist and author of several books on global trade, including her most recent, Trade War, Containers Don't Lie, Navigating the Bluster. Their conversation discusses how to track trade flow in the time of the coronavirus and what that could mean for investors. Email us at wsbpod@seekingalpha.com if you have any feedback or requests for special reports. We hope you enjoy them.
Lorianne, it's a privilege to have you this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I know it's a hectic time right now in New York City. I can only imagine. Really quick, if you don't mind sharing with some of our listeners, what is your basic background to the shipping sector and what drew you here?
Well, I've been covering the shipping sector, oh goodness, for well over a decade, where I've interviewed various shipping titans around the world to following like the intermodal system, because the flow of trade, as you know, is agnostic. And so it's all about supply and demand. And with 90% of things in your home that come on a ship, it's been almost like my drive, if you will, to democratize trade and to make folks realize just how important trade is. And from the trade war to what's going on with the coronavirus, trade is a leading indicator as to what's going on, not only from the health of a country, but also where are we going as it relates to with this virus and how it's impacting life as we know it.
Absolutely. Just such a fascinating sector that impacts, of course, the entire global economy. And it just seems we cannot catch a break, right? We had the trade war for the last year or so, and now we have the coronavirus. Now we have an oil price war that's mixing things up. I mean, it's always an exciting sector. So what first drew me to your writing was your Dynasties of the Sea book. It was a very interesting coverage of some of the top names in shipping, gave you the background. And then more recently, I know you wrote a book, Trade War Containers Don't Lie, Navigating the Bluster. What were some of the takeaways that you learned from that book when you were doing your research and writing? And how does that apply today for the coronavirus?
Sure. I mean, everybody out there is familiar with politicians and the rhetoric, right? That they literally bluster every day, that things are great, you know, nothing to see here, right? But what happened was, as I was looking at the flow of trade, and then hearing the rhetoric of like China's buying or, you know, or whatever the catchphrase was for that day, it wasn't adding up. So what I did was within Trade War, I can show you based on the containers, not based on my opinion, based on the containers that China did not live up to its promises at all. And that also when President Trump was talking about how great the steel industry was recovering, they never did because of the boomerang effect of the trade war. Whereas, yes, with the 232 on steel and aluminum, which helps steel and aluminum producers, you know, produce product, the tariffs that were levied on the Chinese, that of course did that boomerang effect with the farmers, where the farmers weren't selling their product. Well, guess what? They didn't have to buy the John Deere's that are, guess what, made from steel and aluminum. So the whole book really kind of shows you how the flow of trade dictates and shows to you what is going on in almost as real time as you can. And so what I did was, when it comes to the coronavirus, I started looking at this back in January. And you really can go back through my LinkedIn feed, because I have found that for folks in your industry, that I have found that LinkedIn really is the best way to get the information out there. So I started posting drayage, which is the movement of the product within the dock. Coronavirus is hurting people. So if people are sick, people are not working. So I have showed you through the virus what is moving and what is not moving. And then also from a container standpoint, I'm able to use my contacts to dip into those bills of lading to show you how much product is coming here in the United States. For example, I posted a day or two ago how many ventilators are coming in. So this is news that you can use.
Absolutely. I've actually seen several of your articles pop up on FreightWaves, where I believe you contribute as well. And I know you've been ahead of the curve at almost every turn. There was an article in February talking about the coronavirus's impact to trade. And then, in early March, you were talking about, you know, China, of course, was starting to come back online. But now, you know, we've seen the virus spread to Europe and, of course, domestically here in the United States. Does that recent outbreak in the United States and the worsening data we see every single day in Spain and Italy and some of those other European countries, does that change anything? Have you started to notice any data in regards to Europe and United States?
I started posting data on Italy, and as of several days ago, so that's the latest data that I have, so apologies. But something, you know, items are moving. I do have a call into Gene Soroka, who, as you know, is the head of the Port of Los Angeles. And, you know, given the time change, I think Gene probably was sleeping, because it had to be like 3 or 4 his time when I texted him, just to see what's going on. First and foremost, President Trump has said, and this is very important for everybody out there to realize, the flow of trade is going to move. Like right now, as we speak, we're seeing breaking news as it relates to the borders here in North America, right, with Canada and Mexico. Canada, a couple of days ago, you know, they've restricted certain trade, but not the movement of people, excuse me, but they have restricted the people, but they have not restricted the flow of trade. And that's what they're doing now in Mexico. My main thing is, and what I'm trying to find out, is with the lockdown in California, does that impact the port system? Because China has a lot of their product coming in from that port. When you're looking at the bills of lading, and you're looking at the flow of trade. You know, the news came out today about, you know, the port down, I think it was Miami, where, you know, they're being impacted because of all the blank sailings. This is something where if you look at, say, drayage, right, when you look at what's going on at the ground, there's a 30-day delay when it comes from there to here, right, when it comes from China, say, to here. So if you have the blank sailings, it just makes sense that 30 days later, that's when you're going to start seeing more of the impact. With drayage and manufacturing plants moving back up, Gene Sirocca, Mario Cadero, these port directors who told me we are going to start seeing an uptick in ships coming in at the end of March. And you know what? They are. And that's all based on looking at the container flow. So this is something that's all manageable. You just have to kind of put your timeline together to and for that anticipation of when the trade is going to be arriving. As it relates to the flow of trade here within the United States, I have been speaking with trucking folks. Things are moving. I mean, they have to. You know, when you're looking at protein and all the chickens and the beef and everything getting wiped off store shelves, the supermarkets now, as you know, they're modifying the way that they're doing business so they can restock those shelves. So the flow of trade will continue here, albeit a little bit differently.
We'll see how that develops. And, you know, I think a lot of folks just take the trade infrastructure totally for granted. And when you have an issue like this coronavirus outbreak, you suddenly realize just what the lifeblood of the economy and our survival really is. Because, I mean, folks focus on doctors and nurses, as they should, right? A very, very critical part of our infrastructure today. But what happens, right, if we have a total breakdown in the domestic infrastructure of trucks and the food supply, as you mentioned? I mean, that would be so much worse on so many scales. So it's just such a critical thing. I know you call these folks and you have great connections with everyone across the industry. Yeah. Is there any other sort of data sources that you look at that you would recommend people follow?
You know, I follow the data sourcing where it comes to maritime. I look at the trucks. I look to see where things are moving. I look at rails. The flow of trade has so many different components, and the people aspect of it, the delivery system, if you will, is what is so important. And what we saw, you know, gosh, a month ago, right, where you had, and you still have it right now, where you have the casuals on the West Coast, they're not working because, you know, they don't have as much containers coming in. And that's something that I've been waving the flag on back in January, saying, hey, listen, if you have less stuff coming in, you don't need as many people. That's just common sense. I mean, that's not, you know, having any type of degree. I mean, you look at what's coming in or what's not coming in, you know, you can't afford to pay people to twiddle their thumbs. So I would just tell folks, you know, look at the USDA data, see what is being bought, right? See what and where it's going. And then in terms of the roads, look at all the different bills. The big thing right now is in Pennsylvania, they were looking to close the rest stops. That's going to impact the flow of trade because the truckers need a place to go rest. So it's just, you know, read as much as you can. You know, find your favorite, you know, trade articles. Go online, even if you do a Google search and write and do something coronavirus trucks, and then see what comes up, and just kind of become like your own little reporter. And you'll be amazed to see how much information's out there. And then based on your own need, depending on what you're looking to invest in, you know, if you're an owner operator or whatever, you can use that news based on the way that you need to use it. But there is so much out there. You literally have it at your fingertips. You just have to be active and constantly search for it.
That's a message we need in today's environment. You know, your book title, Navigating the Bluster, and you're saying, hey, look at the data, make your own decisions. Don't just rely on this sort of rhetoric. I know you're very active in the news media business. You've talked to a lot of your colleagues. You watch, I'm sure, a lot of the broadcasts we see on CNBC, Fox News, CNN, et cetera. What is the current sentiment broadly? And is there anything these folks are missing when they're getting on TV and updating us?
I don't think so. I mean, there's a ton of stuff out there. You know, one of the biggest things that came out today, Eamon Javers, my colleague, and of course is the bureau chief in DC, this is something that every small business should hear. And I'm actually going to pull up the graphic. Larry Lindsay, former National Economic Advisor, gave me a call several times this morning talking about the bailout, if you will. And there is a huge $300 billion bazooka, okay, that is going to be unleashed in this bailout bill. And this is important. So it could affect up to 80 million workers, all right? This bailout could actually go as high as $1 trillion if small businesses take advantage. And this is what it is. If you you can get a forgivable loan, for your payroll if you keep your employees all on. And so the whole thing is, if you're a small business, you can get this forgivable loan. You can make your payroll so you don't have to lay anybody off. People could still get their money. And the hitch is, they have to be like, you can't fire anybody within 4 months. Because if you do, then you got to pay that loan back. But if not, this is a forgivable loan. And this is huge for the small businesses, because that's the, as you know, they're the biggest employers in our nation. So I really encourage the small businesses to turn on CNBC, to go on .com and to read up on this. Like I said, Larry Lindsay said, this is, as of right now, it's authorized up to $300 billion, could go up to $1 trillion. And again, it's a forgivable loan. And I mean, how good is that, where you don't have to worry, you know, if you have to shut your doors temporarily, or if your business is not as good, you can still employ your people. And that's one hell of a message. And we're the only ones that are reporting on this as of right now. We're the only ones.
Excellent, Laurie. Well, we'll post our blog as soon as possible, and then there'll be other sources. We're recording live. It's around 11 a.m. Eastern on 20 March 2020. So you're hearing this from Laurie-Ann LaRocco, and of course, coverage on CNBC. Also, there's some tax break stuff potentially coming out. I know they've shifted back the deadline for owing taxes, but there's been a lot of confusion about the actual deadlines for the filings. And of course, estimated taxes are a massive expense as well for small business. So we'll have to see what happens there. Laurie-Ann, we got a lot of investors that are going to be listening to the recording here shortly. Anything for investors, any sort of sectors that you think are winners from this? And of course, any sectors that are losers and you might think about avoiding?
Oh, dear. You know, I'm a journalist, so I don't feel right for me to say, hey, listen, this is what I think you should be putting your hard-earned money in. But I always go by the mantra and the rule, because I don't know if folks out there are aware, but at CNBC, we are not allowed to trade because we get proprietary information, and it would make us tainted, right? If I owned a certain stock and I started talking about it, I would benefit from it. So we are precluded from owning individual stock. I have a 401k, just like millions of other Americans. That said, what I'm encouraging folks, it's own what you know, right? Own what you know. And then also just use your common sense of like, where are these companies? Because if there's a company that has solid fundamentals going into this, they're probably going to have solid fundamentals going out. But look at the companies that are increasing their employment right now. Amazon, right? They're hiring 100,000 people to try to meet demand. It's online shopping. Online shopping is going to be here till the dawn of time, right? Netflix. Netflix, people are held up. You know, they probably have more time on their hands to watch movies. I'm not saying that these are buys or sells or whatever, but I would just say, I think we don't give ourselves enough credit as people. We often rely on too many people to say, this is what you should do. Look at what you own. Look around your house. Look what you are buying. And is that company publicly traded? Because honestly, if there's a chicken company out there right now that you're investing in, all the chickens sold out. They're going to be replenishing. We also have to think about long term. You know, I mean, you can buy some things now. Try not to look at the highs and the lows, and in 20 years or something, you'll be pleasantly surprised. That's what I would suggest to folks. But I always joke around, because it's like, I always say, geez, if I could only buy, you know, whatever company it is, because I'm always buying stuff online from certain things. So that's my advice. Buy what you know, and just be and just do common sense about it.
Absolutely, Lorianne. Well, that's excellent advice. And I think it's a lot better than someone just coming on here and gunslinging a few stock ideas. So I really appreciate that, telling folks, hey, do your own research, buy what you know, buy what you trust. Of course, the headlines today that folks are seeing is the plunging oil prices, and they're hearing all these things about this oil price war with Saudi Arabia and Russia, essentially dumping oil into an environment where demand is extremely minimized. Have you been tracking that at all? Any recent insights or ideas of that market development?
Absolutely. I know Harold Hamm of Continental Resources very well. And we actually had Harold on CNBC yesterday with Senator Inhofe, who, as you know, is chairman of the Armed Services Committee. Inhofe sent a letter where, if anybody's interested, go to his website, go to Inhofe's website, because they always have in their press release section on their website letters that they send out. He sent a letter to Secretary Wilbur Ross about initiating a 232 against Saudi Arabia and Russia because of the oil dumping. Now, normally when it comes to the 232, you automatically would say, well, hey, we don't get a lot of oil from Saudi and Russia. Why would they do that? Well, they're going to do it just because the fact of national security. The rationale is this. All right, let's connect the dots. They're saying because Russia and Saudi Arabia are in this overproduction match, right, driving down the price of oil, that is hurting the national security of the United States because it's impacting the oil industry here in the U.S. And that's the reason why they are going after them to stop this. We probably get most of our oil, believe it or not, from Canada, from the oil that we do import. And Inhofe and Hamm are saying that not only is the United States getting impacted by this, but also Canada. So that's the big thing now. And also the questions and the doors being left open. You heard it yesterday for President Trump, where, you know, if he has to, quote, jump on the phone, right, and talk to the king, to the Saudi king, Saudi prince, rather. That's what helped the price of oil. So I would definitely keep an eye on that. You know, Secretary Ross does have that letter. Like I said, it's not like they import a heck of a lot in here, but it is a positive, bullish tone, if you will, in terms of supporting the oil industry in the United States. And that's all public information.
Yeah, thank you, Laurie. And something definitely we need to watch closely. The volatility in the market has just been absolutely unprecedented. So it's good to stay on top of the news. And hopefully, you know, for the good of our own oil infrastructure and oil security, energy security, we'll make sure those prices get somewhat stabilized. Of course, it's difficult when demand has fallen off a cliff. Laurie, I know you're extremely high demand with all the coronavirus outbreak. You're an expert that everyone wants to talk to. I know your schedule is extremely busy. So I want to thank you for joining us. Any parting shots for investors or industry experts on the call about things to watch for in the trade sector?
I would just say within the trade sector, I think we just really need to keep on track of if you have the ability to look at the bills of lading, look at the volumes, see where it's going. You know, the tariff created elbows, right? Elbow joints in the piping of trade where things were diverted. The coronavirus has impacted us where it slowed down the flow of trade. That's predominantly what we're looking at right now. But in the end, trade is agnostic. It doesn't have winners or losers. It's going to flow. It's just a matter of us keeping tabs on how much of it is flowing, but it will flow. We are going to get through this. And, you know, we just have to kind of keep common sense right at the dashboard.
Absolutely. Keep that common sense. Stay on the dashboard of data, and we're going to make it to the other side. Of course, trade will always be important for our global economy. Lorianne LaRocca from CNBC, also a popular author in the shipping sector. Her latest book, Trade War, Containers Don't Lie, Navigating the Bluster. Lorianne, thank you again very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to SeekingAlpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.